Welcome to Merchman Seeds Cup of Joe. On this episode, Lynn was on the road looking at untreated wheat in Illinois this past week. Hear about planting conditions, stand counts, even emergence, and what's to come for hyper-early and untreated wheat. Hear from Ben how seed treatment and other factors are important to consider when planting early in cooler conditions. And Turk summarizes the latest USDA report.
Hi, this is Joe Merchman. Welcome to Merchman Seeds Cup of Joe. Today we have Ben, Lynn, and Turk. This week we're going to start with Lynn.
Yeah, so last week I missed filming. I was out on the road, and one of the highlights of the trip that I had was stopping by and looking at a new grower for us that was interested in some untreated wheat. And last year was kind of our first foray into untreated wheat, so was really curious on how disease pressure, bug pressure was kind of looking in the wheat stand, and this is organic or transitional ground that these guys are looking at. So was real curious on our, like I said, our first foray into that. So stopped by to take a look at how the plants were doing, how the planting conditions, or talk about the planting conditions that were happening when they were planting. They were able to get kind of a good test from a what I would call a early-ish planting date, and then also a late planting date. So when we're looking at that, we're kind of looking at how the plants were tillering, how were they coming out of dormancy, and to be honest, they were kind of in the same boat as we were down here. The plants really never went into dormancy. They had the same boat, real cold conditions, but had a nice layer of snow to insulate the ground. So really never hit that dormancy, but I'll throw some pictures up with Alex here to take a look at it. In that situation, the population was really critical for them to try to maintain a higher population than maybe what we would for our guys that are able to use chemistry. So actually the question was, do I have too much wheat out in the field? And from what I gathered and looked, stand counts were more than adequate, but tillering was looking good. I don't think they really heard anything from a yield perspective about being too thick. What I was really excited about was the real even emergence across all of the wheat stand. When I look at that, when I'm looking at the plants, I think the potential for a main head on all these plants are going to be phenomenal. They got a little bit of tillering, but in this instance, I'm not too concerned about it just because of the population that we really don't need the tillering to be able to make up yield. We have enough plant population there, and the weed control coming up this spring is going to be phenomenal. I think once we finally get in their scenario, they're using poultry manure, and it's a little bit slower release on some of that nitrogen. So as that starts to break down, as we get some heat, we're going to hit that nitrogen and really take off. So really excited. We're confident in our wheat varieties, but it's just something a little bit new with being untreated. So it was a good trip for me to be able to lay my eyes on it and see how no disease. The one thing that I could see was just a little bit of a potential, some frosting off they had 2 weeks ago, some nighttime lows into the 20s for a few hours. But I think that actually happened pretty early and the process, now it's just in the top portion of the leaf.
Talk about the whole scheme of what they're trying to do and what they're getting away from and why they want our ultra earlies and where they're at.
So I was about 20 miles, give or take, from Rockford, Illinois. So on the northern part of the territories where we're thinking of our ultra earlies and our hyper earlies as double crop options. So that's why they kind of came to Merchman's, because they were interested in getting into a double crop rotation in the organics, and also to get away from oats, because a lot of their rotation is corn, bean, oats, and now they're kind of getting to the point where the oats aren't as valuable of a crop, because either you're selling it for feed, or you're selling it to other organic farmers for a cover crop, essentially. And if everyone's raising their own cover crop, then the market for that's pretty low. So they're looking to add another income source to their operation. So what they want to do is target that mid to early June timeframe, be able to get that wheat off, plant their beans. When they look at it from the organic standpoint, there's June is kind of sometimes when they're planting their first crop, just because of weed pressures and whatnot. So if they're able to do that, some of their acres really isn't going to change as far as the operational, and what they're now doing is sliding in another cash crop instead of having a cover crop that either is disc under or taken to seed and sold for relatively lesser value than what this wheat is. And they have some marketing options from organic feed mills, and then just at the end of the day, they can just take it to whatever elevator as well, and marketed as wheat. So two good options there from a revenue source that they have at their disposal. So it's something that they're very excited about. There's a lot of pent up excitement and demand for these ultra earlies from both the conventional guys and now guys looking to transition acres over to the organic side. So we're really excited about that. They want to be one of the first on the hyper earlies, because that will allow them to what the goal is for that would be is to be able to plant that right at the Hessian fly, or a little bit earlier than the Hessian fly date, be able to harvest that first part of June, because what they'll do is they'll run it through a mixed flow dryer, put it in a bin, and then be able to stab their beans in right after that. So like I said, from their standpoint, it's a really exciting endeavor that they're adding another revenue option and also another cover option on their ground, because as Joe has said to us quite often, that sunlight is not wasted. So and they have no other tools beside mechanical tillage, so it's a good option for them to kind of increase that soil biology and the soil life by introducing another crop into the rotation and keep something living on those acres all throughout the year.
Well, it's a little bit helps them on their weed control system too, no
yep.
doubt.
So yeah, you know, we're talking about planting early and harvesting early. You have some considerations as we are in some parts of our area, getting into the swing of things down south, and up here north of I-70, we've got guys that are starting to get a little bit itchy. So what are some considerations that you have as we look to at crop insurance planting time, or a little bit on the early side if an individual has bought up that coverage?
Well, I think the number one thing that we could all talk about is seed treatment, because we're going to be playing in this cooler, wetter environment, I think, for the next call it 2 weeks pretty easily. So seed treatment is going to be very, very important. A lot of guys have already ordered their seed and ordered their seed treatment, but if you're pushing things on the early side, you know, our Sultro Trinemco is a key thing in our starting line, plus specifically the for the sudden death protection coming from the Sultro. We know that the infection happens at the time when the seedling is breaking through the ground, so seed treatment is definitely important when we're planting into cooler conditions. Specifically on the soybean side, the planting depth on the soybean side is a big one to consider, because you want to
interrupt you just a second, Ben, but that turbidity piece of our seed treatment is very important in this early planting, because of, you know, it's a stress reducer too. In other words, when that seed becomes under stress, it needs certain enzymes and different things that it's got to either manufacture, but we already got them on the seed, you know, different, you know, the components of turbidity. So turbidity, Sultro, if you're going to be planting early, you got to have both.
Correct. Nope, I completely agree with that statement. From a planting depth standpoint, we want to push those beans down in the ground a little bit longer, or we want to push the beans a little bit deeper in the ground to keep them in the ground longer. The average frost date for where we are now, I think, is the 2nd or 3rd of May. So what we want to do is we want to push the soybeans in the ground just a little bit further, because if we are taking advantage of this early planting date, we still want to make sure that we are, you know, playing the risk and the odds of when that soybean's coming out of the ground and when the last frost date is going to be. So for Lee County, this Iowa State Extension says it's April 25th. Last year we had a May 2nd or May 3rd, I believe, frost event that took some beans out from the earliest planted time frame. So getting the beans pushed in the ground a little bit deeper buys us some time, so that we're not flirting with that late frost, because as we know, the growing point of soybeans is above ground. It's very susceptible to freeze damage. So basically 28 degrees is what I think we went over 2 weeks ago. 28 degrees for 2 hours will take a soybean stand out if the beans are above ground. So definitely want to be thinking about that. We want to be thinking about tillage. If you are planting the soybeans early, you want to be looking at what tillage scenario you're in. Black ground has a tendency, worked ground has a tendency to be a few degrees warmer at that microclimate. So be picking fields that may have a little bit more tillage, a little bit more black dirt exposed. And maturity is another one that I like to think about. So when you're pushing things right at that crop insurance date, and the crop insurance date is a date for a reason, because the insurance companies have huge amounts of data. So if you're pushing things before the crop insurance date, you're working against the odds of what's going to happen. So I always suggest to follow whatever that crop insurance planting date is. But when we are right there at that 10th or 11th for the state of Iowa for your crop insurance date, I would probably be pushing things a little bit for the fuller season on these fields that you want to get out and start early on, and then go back to your earliest variety when you're in your normal planting time frame. Because what you don't want to do is you don't want to have a super early variety out there way early, because it's not going to take advantage of the long growing season that you're working with. So for here, a normal maturity is probably a 3-6 is our kind of our average or median maturity. So I would probably be planting at that 3-6, 3-7 if you're going super early. And then if you have some 3-0s bought, then that would be the next bean that I would plant after that, and then work your way through the maturity zone.
And the reason being is you don't want all of your beans to mature at the same time. Why you go back to the early one?
Yep. The typical suggestion is to, when you're planting in normal time frames, is to plant your earliest bean first and then work your way to the fullest season. And you're exactly correct, is you want the maturity to be spread out. You don't want them all going through the flowering process or the pod fill process at the same time, because you may get rain, you may not get rain. You know, that all affects how soybeans fill. So
when you're looking at planting depth, if you're an inch and a half guy, go to 2. If you're 1, go to 1.5. Just whatever's comfortable. What's your suggestion on that?
I would say if you are a typical inch and a half guy, I'm probably closer to 2, 2.25. Just get the beans in the ground. We know that they have the push power. We know we're not going to be fighting crusting because we don't have this super warm spell where we're going to get the soil to crust off really quickly. So 2, 2.25. I wouldn't really push much past that, because once we go that deep, you know, we start to get some inconsistencies with the planter. Mm. So I really like that 2, 2.25, and I think that buys you 5 days of emergence time frame, 5 to 6 days of emergence time frame when you're
in delaying it, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm. So all things to think about, because I think there's going to be a lot of guys that are going to be making that hard decision in the next 10 to 15 days here on what we're going to be doing for getting beans and corn stuck in the ground.
And the key thing is soil conditions are ideal. If you're going to be doing that, you better, you know, you don't be mudded in, you better wait. But if the soil conditions are ideal, you know, maybe you could do a field or two. Yep.
Right. For the immediate local area, I think we are going to fight too wet before we fight too cold. So I think you're exactly correct. We want to make sure that we are not pushing the envelope when it comes to moisture being on the wet side, because we are predicted for Sunday, Monday, Tuesday of this coming week, at least another inch of rain. So
for the large part, our guys that are the frequent practitioners of ultra early planting, really imbibitional chilling hasn't been a huge issue because our soil temps have been right at recommendation. I mean, it's not like the guys that plant early are planting into, you know, frosted ground, sub 35 degree soil temperatures. I mean, it's still 40 to 45 and rising quickly in the 5 day after that. You know, when we talk about corn, we get a little bit more finicky, I guess, about that. But it's important to remember that soybeans are kind of in the same boat as well, that they can have some emergence issues if your imbibitional period is not ideal either.
Correct. Yep. You definitely want to be paying attention to what that 2-inch soil temp is. So for sure.
And that's something, yeah, exactly, this time of the year, that when we have the nighttime lows and daytime highs, the 2-inch, we can kind of get a little bit of a fluctuation as we move about. And I think that's what happened last year a little bit, was guys that didn't plant as deep as what you were recommending there. We caught some really good at planting, and then the 7 days afterwards where we were, I mean, growing degrees out the wazoo, that the stuff that was planted at an inch shot right out of the ground. And then, yeah, come the 1st of May, they were exposed to those cold temperatures, were the ones that were probably an inch and a quarter, a half, or three quarters, were able to just buy a little bit of, because we saw it in replant. It was a matter of, what, a day, 2 days was the difference between potential frost damage and not. So
yeah, no, you're exactly correct. That's why that getting them stacked in the ground about an inch deeper than what you would normally plant is going to buy you 5 or 6 days.
And when you're the last one I would like to point out, when you're doing this, it's really important to not chase that planter with your prees. Like, as we're a little bit into the colder temperatures and those beans are going through their processes of coming out of the ground, that we don't want to already add a layer of chemistry that they have to fight through if we get some wet conditions and there's a pool of your PPOs. They're too important not to use, but we just have to manage that when we're in a little bit wetter and cooler temperatures to not have burn off the crook of the soybean as it's coming out of the ground, or have some splash up once the soybean is established on the cotyledons and lose our growing point or our cotyledons.
When you are planting this early, it is an art. It's not a science. It's not a calendar date that you get to look at when you're working with your pre's. So be looking at where the next rainfall is going to come. Try to be as early as possible getting those pre's put in the ground, exactly like what you were talking about, because what you're trying to do is you're trying to get those on and incorporated into the soil with moisture before the beans pop out of the ground. It's tricky because right now we're looking at a window that is fairly tight.
Correct.
So that's a very good point to be thinking about those different products.
Yeah, unfortunately from our perspective, it's an unintended consequence that we deal with every third year.
Yep.
About the time you forget about it, it pops back up again. So just be real cognizant of that as you're pushing forward with early planting.
Yep, couldn't agree more.
Turk, big report this week.
Yeah, there was. USDA come out with their March Prospective Plantings report and grain stocks report, and it was a good day for corn. The USDA is projecting 90 million acres of corn, which is down about 4.5 million acres less than last year, and a couple million less than what the trade guess was. But soybeans were just kind of a neutral report all the way across. Grain stocks and planting was about as expected. So, and wheat acres, same thing there. They were down a couple million, but winter wheat was about steady what they're projecting. So, it was a good day for the grain markets. And the big news, I think, is the fact that we lost 6 million acres of overall all crops expected to be planted. And where did they go? Because cotton's only up a little bit, 500,000 acres. So where did they go? The biggest losses were in the southern Great Plains, Texas, Oklahoma, down in that area. And they're expecting to just not plant corn or soybeans or wheat this year. So I don't know if they're going to go back to grass or whatever, but they've been experiencing drought the last few years, and so I expect that there's some people that are going to go back to what they always used to do rather than what chasing that corn and soybean market.
Well, very good, very good. Well, it's Easter weekend, and so I thought when we got to our corny jokes that we would focus on Easter, you know. So anyhow, actually, this is a story, so I'll read it to you, okay? A man was blissfully driving along the highway when he saw the Easter Bunny hopping across the middle of the road. He swerved to avoid hitting the bunny, but unfortunately, the rabbit jumped in front of his car and was hit. The basket of eggs went flying all over the place, and the candy too. The driver, being a sensitive man, as well as an animal lover, pulled over to the side of the road and got out to see what had become of the bunny carrying the basket. Much to his dismay, the colorful bunny was dead. The driver felt guilty and began to cry. A woman driving down the same highway saw the man crying on the side of the road and pulled over. She stepped out of the car and asked the man what was wrong. "I feel terrible," he explained. "I accidentally hit the Easter Bunny and killed it. What should I do?" The woman told the man not to worry. She knew exactly what to do. She went to her car trunk and pulled out a spray can. She walked over to the limp, dead bunny and sprayed the entire contents of the can onto the little furry animal. Miraculously, the Easter Bunny came back to life, jumped up, picked up the spilled eggs and the candy, waved its paw to the two humans, and hopped down the road. 50 yards away, the Easter Bunny stopped, turned around, waved, and hopped down the road another 50 yards. Turned, waved, and hopped down another 50 yards and waved. The man was astonished. He said to the woman, "What in heaven's name is in your spray can?" The woman turned the can so the man could see and read the label, and it said, "Hairspray restores life to dead hair, adds permanent wave."
I was wondering where we were going with that.
I didn't know either.
Well, you know, it all turned out okay.
It turned out okay.
All right. And as a bonus this week, we're going to do a second story on Easter. I want you to know that we could change this to three bald guys instead of three blondes in this particular story, okay? So I'm not trying to be mean to the blondes out there, okay? Three blondes died and are at the pearly gates of heaven. St. Peter tells them that they can enter the gates if they can answer one simple question. St. Peter asks the first blonde, "What is Easter?" The blonde replies, "Oh, that's easy. It's that holiday in November when everybody gets together, eats turkey and thankful and stuff." "Wrong," says St. Peter, and he proceeds to the second blonde. The same question, "What is Easter?" Second blonde replies, "Easter is that holiday in December when we put up a nice tree, exchange presents, and drink eggnog." St. Peter looks at the second blonde and shakes his head in disgust and tells her she's wrong. Then he peers over his glasses at the third blonde and asks, "What is Easter?" Third blonde smiles confidently and looks St. Peter in the eye. "I know what Easter is." "Oh," says St. Peter, "what is it?" "Easter is that Christian holiday that coincides with the Jewish celebration of Passover. Jesus and his disciples were eating at the Last Supper. Then the Romans took him to be crucified. He was stabbed in the side, made to wear a crown of thorns, and was hung on a cross with nails through his hands. He was buried in a nearby cave, which was sealed off by a large boulder." St. Peter smiles broadly with delight. Then the third blonde continues, "Every year the boulder is removed aside so that Jesus can come out, and if he sees his shadow, there will be six more weeks of winter."
I think you got to keep them both up.
Okay, we can do that. Thanks, everyone, for watching this week. I hope you and your family are safe and healthy, and have a happy Easter. See you next week.